You are listening to episode 137 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, the do's and don'ts of disruption.
Welcome to episode 137 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is May the 11th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my brother from another mother, James Furlough. And by that I mean my, you know, same mother. It just doesn't quite rhyme as well if you don't say it the way you're supposed to.
My brother from the exact same mother, James Furlough.
Yeah. Exactly. It's Mother's Day. That's the long and short of it. That's what I was driving at. So,
well, happy Mother's Day to you mom listeners out there. Or listeners
with
specifically
mothers. Our mom, because without our mom, there wouldn't be a podcast called The Furlough Bros. Well, there might be, but it would be really an incredible sequence of events that would lead to it. Maybe they talk about music or something.
Or movies.
Or movies. Sorry, isn't that what we do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw The Neighbors this week, actually.
Alternative universe. Yeah, I saw that. So was it good? Let's just start with that.
It's funny. It's really funny. It's weird in it straddles this line between, like, all the people who make these movies are growing up, and you can tell. Because they're not about you know, they're not about mid to late 20s problems anymore. They're about, you know, early 30s problems and having kids and growing up and becoming adults, and they're all freaking out about it, and it's funny.
Yeah, but there was an interesting article that was talking about that, where they were like, yeah, this is the new trend, and so they expect to see. Well, they were saying Hollywood, so I have a new headset that I'm messing with, and so I think I'm going to be playing with it all night long. So that's why I sound different, they were saying that Hollywood's going to pay really close attention to how Neighbors does, because it could be a harbinger for movies to come. Ooh, if it does well.
I like that word.
I know you do. I knew you'd appreciate that.
Yeah, that's not surprising to me, because it's like, you know, yeah, I mean, it's got the raunch factor of, you know, of a lot of those Judge.
Well, you know, the worst part is, though, I feel I watched the trailer for it, and all it did was annoy me, because I felt like when you empathize with or you feel for the character.
Yeah. Did you say you just muted yourself?
Did I?
Yeah, it was weird.
Oh, weird. Anyways.
So you resonated.
Yeah, I resonated with, or identified with, that's the word I wanted, you know, with the Seth Rogen character guy. I'm like, oh, those kids would just drive me crazy, and I just feel like it would just be annoying to watch, but I don't know.
That's funny. Talk about where we are in life. I more resonated with the Zac Efron character because of how good-looking I am. You know, being loud and having loud sound systems, and, you know, I don't do the frat house thing anymore, but, you know, a lot sometimes, and, you know, and I don't know. It's just, it's funny. It's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting difference. And I don't know. I think that's the one thing I went with one of our cousins, and I told him after the movie, I said, you know, I didn't really laugh at all the first half an hour, and I think it's because I don't have a kid. I think if I had a kid, it would have been hysterical. It was more of them just kind of, it was setting the stage of, you know, trying to bring this character actor, by and large, Seth Rogen, and turn him into a dad. So you were, but at the same time, it had to be funny, and, you know, I don't know, but It's good. Yeah. It's fun. It's a good movie. Right. I, you know, like I said, it's a little bit raunchy, but it's funny.
Yeah.
there's some pretty funny scenes.
good to know. But that's not why we're here. You took your line.
That's not why we're here. Thank you. Why are we here? We're here because this week, like every week.
Every week.
We're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, last but not least, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he's going to throw your way. Get that out of the way. Can I take care of business as it
were? I work for HP, but do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And I just finished this last week HP's Standards of Business Conduct, and it was reaffirmed to me that I should tell you that.
Nice. So, I appreciate your conductiveness with business
matters.
Yeah,
dude, every year
we got
to take this, like, it's like an hour-long training thing to make sure we're conducting business in a standard ethical way.
I understand. One of the nice parts about working for a really small company is that that never happens.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's a nice part or not. maybe it leads to long-term problems, but at least I don't have to sit through that meeting.
It's all virtual, self-paced, man.
Oh, baby, which
it's
means you can like goof off of what's going on. Nice.
Yeah, except for the fact, they ask you questions of understanding, and they have that, and they can track it on an individual basis, so you'll actually get like an email nastygram if you don't do it by a certain date. They're like, we noticed you haven't done this yet, because it's like apparently you get in trouble.
Yeah.
If you don't. I wouldn't know because I always do it, but that's what I hear.
Oh, you're so ethical,
dude. I'm that guy
taking care of
it. I'll do it. If you ask me to do it, I'll do it. Even if I'm like, I don't know about this, I'm like, okay, I'll do it. Whatever.
It's good to know.
Also, like, for example, so we'll keep with this. Big company, little company. In order for me to have email on my phone, I have to have an app installed on it that can track my email or something. I don't know. They claim it's to keep it secure and whatever. And so there's some people who are like, dude, this is my individual device.
You keep making yourself go mute. It's weird.
What was that?
You just all of a sudden you went mute. It was a moot point.
Well, and then you like repeated yourself like 50 times.
Really? Uh-oh. Is it Google? Google Plus?
No, it's probably my headset. Here, I'll have to.
Uh-oh.
I'll go grab my other pair. And we might flip-flop something in and out. But that's right. We'll solve this. We'll solve this. So anyways, some people were like, I have ethical problems with HP being able to, see what I'm doing on my device. And I was like, yeah, me too, but I'll do it anyways.
Man.
So I'm that guy.
I have ethical problems with my boss being able to track everything I do on my phone. And by ethical problems, I mean business problems, because he knows that I'm surfing Reddit. And so I surf over LTE instead.
There you go.
Once again, I'm glad my boss doesn't listen to this show. but yeah, if you do, yeah, that's funny. Ethics is an interesting question. For the engineers, they would make us take like tons of classes on that kind of stuff. Like, don't be jerks. I'm like, okay, we'll try not to be. But
that's good. Yeah.
If you want to follow us throughout the week and see all sorts of posts and stuff that we put, pictures and as James referenced when he said, I saw you saw that movie. That's because he follows me on social media. And what social media do you ask? Well, Instagram and Twitter. Those are the big ones. At Matthew D. Furlow. That's my Twitter. Next Wiggin 4. NextWiggin. Is my, that's like Ender Wiggin. For Instagram and then Facebook. Just type in my name. Seriously, like, you can find me. It's all public anyways. And But man, I don't think I've ever turned down I've denied some friend requests where you're like, you're clearly not a real human being.
Go away.
But yeah.
Or phishing.
But you know, if you appeared, what?
Let's see here. I just typed your name into Google, which has some sort of atom molecule thing on it for its thing today. Let's see, your very first one was Facebook, and then your actual website, and then Twitter, and then a post that I did, and then iTunes podcast, and then furloughbros.com/Matthew, and then you're in the white pages, then your MySpace page.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. I don't have MySpace.
Very bottom page is your Google Plus page. Apparently you do, so let's see here.
Click on it. What does it say?
Yeah, let's see here. It's resolving. It's thinking hard here.
It's resolving.
Matthew Furloughs profile on MySpace, the place where people come to connect, discover, and share. And load. All right, let me click it again. Just load. Oh, by the way, on the side, because you're my Google Plus contact, it has all of your contact information and a picture of you.
Whoa,
but I think that's like, just for me.
Yeah. Look at that. There's like, yeah, that's like a real web page. It's a picture of me. Weird. I did not know that this existed.
Wow, check that out.
I was unaware.
About...
My top eight.
That picture?
Oh, baby. Do I have photos?
Well, there's a picture of like...
Whoa, I thought these photos were like gone. That's funny. They kept them. It's one of my favorite pictures of me getting lightsabered to death by some kid. Like we showed up in a Best Buy and like I had my lightsaber and he took out the Sith lightsaber and we started like dueling. And just like he's like this random 5-year-old in the store. And one of my friends was taking pictures, and he hit me, and I, like, crumpled to the ground and fell on the ground dead. And he took the lightsaber, he flipped it upside down and stabbed me right in the gut. And my friend managed to capture a picture of it. Oh, my gosh, I was laughing so hard. He was like, you knew exactly what to do with a lightsaber. That is awesome. good times. Wow, hey, nice job, MySpace, remembering that I exist. I thought that was long gone. That's crazy, man. Who else is in my... Alex Gravett still has one? The Roleras? Who else is in my... Whoa. Wow, that's nuts.
Man. So, that's one blast from the past. You can also find me online at James Furlough on the Twitter, on the webs, on whatever.
I saw an article that I decided not to talk about today that was about the internet crumbling. And kind of like it was just old, especially with the prevalence of apps and how kind of apps have taken over by and large on your like prominent way to connect with the internet, and as opposed to web pages. Which thank you, MySpace, for just crushing that entire argument, man. You guys are doing good work.
Yeah, I mean, I think I read a similar one, and it's kind of like the internet is clearly not dead because all of those communicate and connect through the internet. Now, is the web page dead on mobile? Perhaps. But, whatever. It's just taking a different form. It's not dead.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I decided not to talk about it, because I thought it was kind of just a stupid article. But
good. Glad we knocked that one out. What I would like to talk about, though, is China, and more specifically, Alibaba. Am I saying that right?
Alibaba. Prince Alibaba.
Alibaba? Prince. Yeah. Anyways, they are a tech company, a Chinese e-commerce company, by the way. They filed for an initial public offering. They're going public. And they're not small, apparently. Sometimes
China is.
Yeah, and they are described as a combination of eBay, Amazon, and Google.
You know, if you were going to be a combination of three internet companies, those are three good ones to pick.
Yeah. And they're pretty sure that they're going to set the record for the biggest IPO in history.
Wow.
Yeah. And apparently their revenue is like, or their company's value, I can't remember now, is actually like bigger than eBay and Amazon combined. So they're not small. Ooh. Yeah.
And they're going public.
They're going public. They expect that they'll probably raise somewhere between $15 and $20 billion, which Facebook's $16 billion, which was the current record. And they're like, yeah, they'll probably end up breaking that one pretty easily there. Yeah, they're not small. And what's interesting about them is that they are 23% of them is owned by Yahoo. And that is actually the big driver of Yahoo's value right now in their stock is Alibaba's doing really well. And so Yahoo's stock is doing really well.
Wow. That is random.
Look,
that is not something I would have guessed.
Yeah, Yahoo, I don't remember the exact reason how they got in on it, but a few years ago they funded them, and that has turned out really well.
One of those other CEOs that got fired for being retarded.
yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, they, let's see here, they're huge. They have 231 million active buyers who spent a total of $250 billion last year on their website. That's a lot of money. Which, again, that's the volume. That is more than eBay and Amazon combined. I'm right there.
How many users was it?
231 million active buyers.
That would be like every adult in America buying. That is so many people.
How about this one? 80% of all Chinese e-commerce transactions go through Alibaba. Yeah. And so one of the things, I like this quote here. It said, it brings to the forefront of everybody's mind that Amazon and eBay are not the number one e-commerce markets in the world. The world doesn't end when you leave Silicon Valley. Like, yeah, I hope to shout. These guys are not small.
Turns out.
So what they're going to do is they're going to raise some money. I'm just glad
Yahoo owns a quarter of them.
Yeah, well, and they expect Yahoo's going to sell off about half their shares. And so then, like, yeah, Yahoo can pretty much buy whatever they want at that point then because they'll have some, some change. Yeah, so they're going to be able to, you know, they're going to raise some money and be able to defend their position even more. And everyone else is pretty sure that they're also going to try to enter into the United States as an e-commerce player. Because right now, I mean, I don't buy anything off of them. And I mean, I don't even know if it's in English. Let's see here. Alibaba.com. Will this work?
Alibaba. Manufacturers, nice. Suppliers, exporters. Oh, that's a lot of English.
Oh, yeah.
Global trade starts here.
Apparel, underwear.
Men's clothing.
Ooh, a necklace. Kitchen faucet sink. These are, like, so random.
I'm gonna get jeans from Pakistan.
We're gonna get iPhone 5 cases.
Oh, nice. That's what? $13 jeans? Holy cow, those are ugly jeans. Wow, that's cool. Man, I'll have to check this out. I'm not going to buy anything from them. Who am I joking? I don't buy anything from Amazon. I'm the wrong demographic. That's not true. I buy books from Amazon and then get them stolen.
That's right. Yeah, so they're going to go public, they think, sometime later this year. There's no real hard deadline on it, but they're not a small company. It will be good for Yahoo. It'll be good for some other investors. It'll be good for Alibaba, of course. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. There's just big company out there that the U.S. just largely ignores.
There's only 150 employed people, 150 million employed people in America.
Huh. Is that higher, lower than you expected, or?
Well, it's a lot. I don't know. I'm just like comparing that to the number of active buyers on Alibaba. I mean, it's just a scale that's crazy. I mean, it's so much bigger. And that's the thing with China, right? Like everything they do is gigantic. You know, China Mobile has twice as many users as there are Americans. it's insane. It's insane. Yeah. It's so big. It is so big. Jeez, I mean, anytime you consider any major movement that any of these companies are doing and you don't include what they're trying to do in China, you've completely missed the picture. I was talking to one of my good friends, and we were talking about the 4.7-inch iPhone versus the 5.5 and whether or not Apple's going to make the 5.5. And he was like, we talked about it, and like he asked me what I would want. I said, well, 4.7. And I probably would, and I'd have a hard time choosing between a 4 and a 4.7. Like, I like them kind of small. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, and he's like, not the 5.5. I was like, the 5.5 is ridiculous. How many people buy 5.5s? And he's like, oh, yeah. And, you know, and he's agreeing with me. And finally, like, he goes, so, you know, why would they even make the 5.5? I was like, China, because they'd sell a billion of them. It's unbelievable how many they would sell. The Chinese buy them in droves, and there are so many Chinese people. It's crazy. It's just, it's absolutely insane. I mean, you can't. I mean, it's just nuts. But you know. Good times. So
there it is.
Speaking of Apple, and buying stuff, Apple, rumor has it, Apple bought something this week or settled on a price for what they want to buy.
It makes no sense.
As you can see, they what?
I don't, oh, go ahead. I'll let you finish and then I'll interject.
As you can tell from what I have on my ear bones, that I'm not a fan of this company. I go with Skullcandy, but they're buying Beats, or part of Beats, or all of Beats, or nobody really knows. All they think, the rumor is, they're going to make Mr. Dre, a.k.a. Dr. Dre, a bazillionaire, which is kind of cool. And for Dr. Dre, it just doesn't really affect me at all. no real tangible way. But like I said, it's just a rumor. A lot of people have confirmed, you know, big players have confirmed that they definitely were in talks. But no word on what the actual deal was or what they settled on. But
yeah.
What were you going to say?
It just doesn't make any sense from everything that I've been reading. I don't get why they would buy them. It's atypical. Okay, there's a streaming service, but it's not that big. It's not proven. Okay, they've got headphones, but they don't match Apple's style. From everything I've read, it's not like the absolute best quality. Though, to be fair, HP includes them with like all of their products. So there's that.
Yeah.
HP would be really bummed if.
Oh yeah.
They end up getting bought. That would be a bummer. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, it's rare that Apple buys a third party brand like that, and you know, takes them on. I'm just trying to figure out. Like,
I think there's a lot. I actually like hesitated bringing it up on the show because it's still in the rumor phase.
Yeah, it's still rumor mill.
And it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It's not. We don't have the complete picture yet because I've heard a lot of people that are like,
dead.
Basically, Apple. What?
Maybe that's a sign that Apple's dead. It's rotten at the core. Ha ha.
I heard a bunch of people say that basically Apple has lost its cool factor, and this is their way of buying back cool because Beats has got a good brand, and it's all about the triumph of marketing over quality, which I think is ridiculous. I honestly think it's just like, you know,
like Apple's
I bought Skullcandy because I think they look cool. And they what?
Man, Apple's not about cool. Am I cutting in and out like crazy?
Yeah, a little bit.
This is annoying.
Whenever I
well,
talk, I think
we're
I
gonna
get.
deal with it this entire show.
Okay.
What?
Good to know. So basically, yeah. So Apple, like, I know. I think it's stupid. I think that idea is dumb. But the biggest thing that I'm getting is like the price for the rumor of what they bought for the price that they paid for it is wrong. It's not wrong. We don't know the whole deal. It's either a lot more money or they didn't buy all of Beats. And the simple reason for it is, you know, Oculus Rift doesn't have a product. They don't have sales. They don't have much of a future beyond, you know, the promise of what people think is kind of cool. And Facebook paid $2 billion. Nest Lab has two products, a small market, slow growing, but just basically, they wanted to hire these guys and have, you know, have the creator of the iPod working for them. And Nest, I mean, it's a really cool product. They've got a lot of really smart people working on them. They paid $3.2 billion for Nest Labs. Like, you sit there and you go, now compare that to Beats Audio, which, yeah, they're not the biggest players in the, you know, well, they're not the biggest audio player in the market, but they're still huge, and they're
Yeah.
growing, and they've got a lot of potential, and people really like them. And you're trying to tell them, and they've signed all these they've inked all these contracts for the streaming audio, you know, thing, and that they've got going on. They've got a bunch of different people working for them. I shrug my shoulders and I say the $3.2 billion doesn't make sense. They're worth more than that. And if
Or
Apple
they're not.
bought the entire, yeah. I don't know. I can say if Apple got the entire Beats Audio for $3.2 billion, it's a screaming deal. It's just a steal. And my guess is that they didn't buy the hardware. For the exact reason that you said. It's, you know, it doesn't fit their style. It's not what they do. You know, Johnny Ives he's so powerful at the company right now. Unless he loves Beats Audio headwear, and I just don't buy it, that he does.
Maybe there's
You
a
know,
specific
I
white
don't know.
model that he likes.
Yeah, right. I have a feeling that Johnny Ives would love to make some headphones, but, you know,
Well, he did. I
why
own a
would he?
pair.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, good point. He made the headphones, he made the earbuds, you know, and it's just, you know, I don't know. It's like you said, it's not their style. It's not what they do. And maybe they're trying to change things up and try something new, which cool. I'd be excited to see it and see how it turns out. But just given what the company is and given the price that they're talking about, it doesn't make any sense. You want to know what I think is going on? Honestly,
Yes, I do.
this is my full guess. I think Johnny, I thought it was like Levine because it. It, the I at the beginning of his last name is looks like an L, and I always thought it was just Levine, and I was like, okay, his name's Levine. And then I heard somebody actually pronounce it, and I was like, what the heck is that? And then I realized it's an I. It's IOVI, like EIN, it's just, whatever. I have no idea how to say his name, so it's gonna be Johnny Iovine, whatever. I think he is incredibly smart when it comes to the music industry. He's got a lot of connections and he's able to ink deals. And Apple's been having a really, really hard time without Steve Jobs doing that with media companies. I think what happened was they went to him and said he got his start like or he became huge rather with being one of the co-creators of American Idol. So I mean he's a guy who gets pop culture music. Obviously they're like his two big ventures were American Idol and Beats Audio. What? Like, okay, the guy's got a resume. I think Apple went to him and said, hey, we want to work with you. We think you get the music industry. We think you get what the future of the music is. We want you to be part of the DNA of Apple. And he said, look, I got this program I'm working on. I got this project I'm working on with Beats Audios. We think it's got a huge financial future, and I got partners that I'm not just going to walk away from. And Apple said, what if we make it worth your while? And that was how they came to the number they came to, is what was the number that was going to make everybody happy so that he could join Apple. And And they are, I think what they're going to buy, I think they're going to buy out the streaming audio service and a bunch of these contracts that Apple's been having a hard time kind of locking down for a Spotify style competitor. They've all of a sudden, they've got those locked in for a year, 2 years, and they can build some momentum on the service before they have to start renegotiating with companies. And then with the hardware, if they bought the hardware, which I still don't think they did, what they're going to do is they're going to basically tell Johnny Ives, hey, pick whatever hardware you want to keep, whatever patents you want to keep, whatever, and then and do with it what you want with it. Build some cool looking Apple headphones, the big old Apple symbol on them, and then we'll sell the rest. And we'll Beats Audio will become, you know, something else with somebody else. And I think it was just a payday to get Johnny Iovine into the company, which is basically what Google did with Nest Labs. You know, and that to me is reasonable. That to me makes sense and is a, you know, is a that's the sort of thing that these companies do regularly, and it's the sort of thing that Apple would make sense for Apple because they, like you said, they never, ever buy brands. They buy technology. If it's good technology and it's something that they can incorporate and bring into their fold, they'll buy it, and then they get rid of the brand, and with one notable exception, and that was Siri. They kept the brand, but that's just because – I don't know, it was a good brand and nobody knew of it yet. And it was like, well, it's clever, we'll keep it. I can't believe that they're going to bring their headphones. And the only thing is that if you walk into the store, man, like they sell a bunch of different headphones and maybe they just sit there and go, you know, headphones sell really well. we want that action. But it's just hard for me to believe that a company that prides themselves
like next big thing, huh?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. They're a company that prides themselves as catering to audiophiles. And the problem with Beats, and I hate people who get down on like just crack down on the quality of Beats because they're overpriced. Don't get me wrong. They're overpriced. You're paying extra for style. But, you know, as a couple of Mac owners, okay, I get that. I get the cool tax. But the thing is that like what they are is they're designed for a particular audio profile. If you're listening to a particular type of music, they're just fine because they do post audio adjustments. So like they basically have a built-in bass boost. And so if you're listening to hip hop, they're perfect. If you're listening to classical music, they're not great. And if you consider yourself an audiophile, which scientifically demonstrated, most people who think they're an audiophile aren't. They're just pretentious. There are incredibly rare genetic freaks who can tell the difference, but they're genetic freaks. They don't exist in the wild. And people who, you know, super pride themselves on great quality music, they can't actually tell the difference. They just like the idea that they think they can. But Beats distort the sound for a particular type of music. I'm not going to deny that. But the idea that somehow they're terrible headphones and you should make fun of them because you listen to the wrong kind of music on them. What's wrong with you? Like, people just drive me nuts sometimes. Like, whatever. I'm defending Beats because I don't even buy them. I'm not even, I think Skullcandy is a cooler company.
You are such an Apple fanboy that you've now find yourself in a position of defending them.
I know, right? I've defended Beats for a while, okay? I like to take a fair and balanced approach to these sorts of things. I like to put all my vitriol into people who attack stuff as opposed to I like to attack the attackers as opposed to attack the defenders. I think.
Fair enough.
That's my excuse. I'm talking to you, Mac Daily News, BT Dubs. You guys are a bunch of jerks. Like, come off your high horse, man. At least listen to what deal Apple inked before you start, like, condemning Apple for making the deal. Like, for crying out loud. Actually, they've got inside people that they talk to. They might actually know what the deal is. But it's besides the point.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So let's change gears here and let's talk about startups for a little bit here.
Okie dokie, artichoke.
Because this last week was TechCrunch Disrupt.
Oh baby.
Did you follow much of it at all?
I followed it a lot, but.
Oh really?
Oh yeah.
Cool. That was more than me, but I'm gonna lead out anyways because I know who the winner and who the runner up was.
Tell me.
There you go. Do you know actually? Besides.
Not off the top of my head. I've just been following the different like companies as they've come up.
If you had to guess who it was, would you?
Oh no.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, I just opened the article, so now I could guess.
Okay. So the winner is a company called Verb. V-U-R-B.
Verb. They spelt it wrong.
Well, you know, it was an available URL for a reasonable price. Man. So they are an interesting company, and then we'll talk about the runner-up because I think they're more interesting, and that'll tell you where I'm at in life. They talked about how in the world of search used to be, you know, when the World Wide Web, you know, you're talking about the web dying, was first started up, there was this concept called surfing the web, right? Sound familiar? And,
yes.
And it was this idea of going from blue link to blue link to blue link to blue link, and you would be jumping across the web, surfing the pages, if you will, and finding
down the rabbit hole.
Interesting. Yes, exactly. And so these guys were commiserating that no longer happens. Now we are a world of tabs or an internet of tabs, right? Where we have all these discrete, isolated searches and paths that we're going down. And so we try to, so we separate them all out. And he gave an example of, you know, if you wanted to, I forget what it was, like go on vacation or do a weekend getaway. You got to research the hotel, where to eat, fun things to do, the people you want to do them with, things like that. And so they were just saying that, you know, you for each of those different paths, they may not be related, and you'll have a different set of tabs opened up in order to, you know, do that search. And mm-hmm. so they're like, it's just, you know, and it's a sea of blue links, right? And that's it for like Google mm-hmm. searches, essentially. And so what they said is that they've created a way so that you can essentially surf the web again. And so it's an example of you might be searching for movies, and because maybe you wanted, you know, dinner and a movie, right? He said, let's say you're searching for movies. You would search for it on Verb, and then you might bring up a movie, and you go, oh, this one looks interesting. And, you know, like Spider-Man 2, it looks interesting. Maybe we want to go watch that. And it'll show up the Spider-Man thing. And then if you wanted to, you could click in to see the Rotten Tomato. You could see reviews, see the trailer, you know, which is kind of that surfing idea. Oh, go down the rabbit hole. And then he'll say, like, but maybe you decide you want to go watch Neighbors instead. And so you go search for Neighbors. What will happen then is that that box or research that you have been doing for Spider-Man 2 will shift down a spot, and then that next, you know, that top section where you know that main interface is now all about Neighbors, and you watch that and you're like, all right, well, maybe I'm still not 100% sure. Maybe I'll see if Winter Soldier is still in theaters. And so you search for Winter Soldier. Spider-Man 2 drops down. Neighbors is the next one in line. And so his whole point is that they're doing a couple things there. One, they're giving you a rich visual history of things that you've searched so you don't forget about them, that they're there. And then two, they're pulling information from a bunch of different sources and putting them into one context-aware interface so that you can learn about you know, all about those things. Like I was talking about with the movie, right? It's not just a description. You know, that's there. There's reviews. There's maybe stuff about the actors. There's related movies, you know, that kind of stuff. And then they're saying, like, right now they've got it for places and for media, which is somehow different than movies. And what they eventually want to add are, like, people and startups and other verticals. And so that's kind of their – unlike Google, which is just a general web search, they're starting down specific verticals and paths. and you know, and going on that way. So they were the winners of TechCrunch Disrupt.
Congratulations. It sounds cool. I mean, I think the reality of it is that Google's trying to get there. You know, the whole computer thing. What Google's trying to build is an AI that talks to you.
What they were saying is that it's less of a Google search competitor and more of a Google Now / Siri competitor. Which I was like, maybe Google Now is the more appropriate, reference point. Because Google Now is one where. It's a pretty cool deal, right? Where it knows where you're at and it helps you plan out your events and it'll tell you how far stuff is. It knows what things you're interested in and it's kind of got that running log and list of stuff and you can do searches and get more information from there. I don't know. It's a little different, I guess, but they're saying it's closer to that than just a straight up search, but it sounds like an interesting tool for if you're trying to do some research on a specific vertical. It sounds like it could work pretty well to help you plan all of that, or at least figure out what you want to do.
Right.
So that was the winner.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And I should probably.
I signed up for it, so when I get a chance, I'll let you know what I think.
Cool. The runner-up, actually, that was significantly more interesting, but that's because I own real estate. So a company called ISI Technology was founded by a guy who also founded Blue Rhino, which are those refillable propane tanks. I'm sure you've seen them in front of like Safeways and Home Depots and
other places. He founded that?
Yeah, he founded Blue Rhino, took it to IPO'd, and then decided and then asked the question, what am I going to build next?
Okay, I'm bored.
Yeah. So this guy, he's a successful person, and which is why I'm pretty sure this new company will be successful because he's figured it out. Blue Rhino is a pretty interesting concept. You know, you buy their tank, and then instead of having to get it refilled, you know, like our dad has to do at the gas station, you just walk up and go, I want a new one, and you pay whatever it is. I don't know the exact amount. It's like $25, and they just exchange tanks with you. And
it's the beer keg model.
Yeah, exactly. It works pretty well, like I said, which not really invented anything. That's more like he figured out a business model. And so apparently since 2006, he has been working on a water heater.
Okay. That's not that exciting, but I want to hear about it.
I know. Well, his point is he goes, water heaters are based on an old dead technology. And so his, the HeatWorks Model 1, is based on, you know, it's mostly digital. And so it's a tankless water heater. There's four types of water heaters and maybe two groups. There are tank water heaters. Okay. And then there are tankless water heaters. Then there are electric water heaters and gas water heaters, and you can create the four combinations through those different types, right? For example, our parents have a gas tank water heater. All of my homes are electric tank water heaters. The downside of that is that, the way the tank water heater works is that it keeps a tank full of water warm all the time. In case you decide one day, I want some hot water, it's ready for you. So not the most energy efficient devices in the world. Kids and stuff like that, which is what I do. But, there's that. And then, one of the new innovations is this tankless water heater, which is essentially a water heater that doesn't require a tank. It instantly heats it. And what happens is, in a tank one, it's actually kind of cool. It's a tank, and then they stick a metal diode or rod that goes inside the actual tank and is just sitting in the water. And then for the electric one, it just runs electricity through it. Like a light bulb gets hot. You know, that's all that it is, and it just heats up the water around it.
Yeah.
It's really not complicated. And then for the tankless one, it's a series of tubes, just like the internet, where so they run back and forth, and you know, they're all inside. And then what happens is the heat, it heats up those tubes, and then the water runs through the tubes, and by the time it gets to the end, it's the temperature that it needs to be. And so you know, so the idea is all it's doing is keeping this small little compartment warm instead of trying to do an entire tank. So they are more efficient. They primarily tend to be gas ones because they do a better job of heating up that small area, but there are some electric ones that exist. They are also wicked expensive. Cause I've looked into it cause you know, I'm like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. Save on your energy costs for that. But like a normal water tank is somewhere in the neighborhood of like if you get a really nice one, $800. These tankless ones are like $2,000 to $3,000.
Woo!
Yeah, exactly. But they're like, hey, but you'll save on electricity or, you know, money, energy savings. And you're like, yeah, well, maybe. And from everything I've read, they said it actually only makes sense if you install it yourself. If you hire someone else to install it, the payback period is just like a joke. And so I'm like, oh, great. So anyways, all of those use the old method of heating things. And so what these guys have done is they figured out a new way to heat the water so it is significantly more efficient. And they don't use those old style of, you know, those heating things or whatever. And so which has a couple advantages. And so they say it's a digital water heater. A, it is tankless, so it's very small. It doesn't take up a lot of room at all. B, because it's digital, it has auto-stabilizing hot water, so which allows it to do a couple cool things. And not just like – so normal tanks are just like it's on or it's off, you know, and then once it hits the desired temperature, it's off. And then it's just like full back on, whereas this one can actually kind of go in between, which is neat. And then another thing is it actually does have a Wi-Fi system in it so that you could adjust the temperature of the water on the fly if you wanted. So like one of their examples were like, you know, let's say you have the babysitter at home. You could set it so that it will never get above like scalding. And that way, you know, your kid will be safe. They won't get like burned during a bath because there's like nothing you can do about it. Another cool thing about it is that like normal water heaters require cold water to come in and then they heat them up and send it out. This could accept any temperature of water and then it will just adjust it to whatever that final thing it is that you want, I guess, as long as it's warmer. And so their idea was like in our situation, in our household, we've got our water heater in the garage and our shower, our bathroom sink and shower, are the furthest things to it. And it actually takes a while to, you know, warm up the water. And so we will just run the water for a couple minutes to let it get hot. And he goes, you could stick this thing right in the middle of the line, right before your bathroom, and it'll take whatever the water is and then just instantly heat it up for you. So that when you turn it on, it's within a couple seconds, it's hot. And he's like, and it'll do start with the cold water, and then as the hot water, you know, starts mixing in, it'll auto stabilize where it goes, oh, if it's warm, I don't have to heat it up anymore. Cool. So like, so no energy lost there for reheating up the water. And he was also like, you could also just set it right after your hot water tank too. So when it starts out and the water's warm, because it's not going to do anything, but as you drain your hot water and, you know, it starts to cool off, you know, after you have multiple people take a shower, like has happened in mom and dad's household at times, like this one, it'll just pick it up and it'll just make sure it keeps a steady, constant temperature. So anyways, pretty cool from a guy who has the money and the experience to take it to the market. Oh yeah. Here's the other thing. It's $400.
Oh, wow.
And from what I understand, he's like, it's pretty easy to install. So yeah.
So I can't figure out how it works.
Oh, they also raised, it looks like, almost $500,000 on Kickstarter to get it going.
Yeah, I'm looking at. Okay, how is the conventional tankless water heaters? Electricity passes through the heating coil. Okay. All right. So this. Okay. Cool. So basically, all it is it's a it's a. They've got it's not entirely different. They're just passing the water through like a heat, you know, a heated area, but they put a computer in there with a thermocouple. So they basically have a control loop on it, and that's cool, because when you have a control loop, it's basically all that what's that one company that we just were talking about?
Verb?
No, Dr. the one Dre before beats. That with the Google bot. Nest. It's basically Nest cost savings come from the fact that not that it like heats your house up faster, it's just that it heats you. It's more intelligent about how it does it, right?
And, yeah.
And by that it means it's keeping track of everything and doing it at the right time and doing it properly. I have no idea how they're able to sell them for $400 when they used to cost $2,000. It doesn't express what it's doing there. But yeah, I mean that makes sense. I'm actually surprised that that's not just kind of standard technology. But I don't know I don't follow the tankless water heater market, so I.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm only surprised because, like, you know, feedback control loops are standard in like all temperature control stuff, but it makes it considerably more expensive to do. I mean that makes, I don't know, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Generally, because when fascinating. I love that kind of stuff, because you're basically taking, you're not making a, it's not a huge leap forward. You're taking a couple of different technologies and applying pretty well understood, you know, engineering concepts and making something new. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
that's very
I
cool.
Liked it. So they were runner-ups at TechCrunch Disrupt this year.
Well, you want to know who the real winner in my heart was?
Who?
Chick named Grace Choi. Chow? Choi? Choi? I'm doing bad with names today. She came
that's
up
okay.
with Mink. I don't know. Maybe I... When you look at Verb and what Verb does, I guess it makes sense why Verb would be a winner. But
I don't know why they won. To be honest,
I don't know why they won. But I think it's funny. I think Mink is a big so Grace came up with a product called Mink, and one of the reasons why I like it is because if I could invest in anybody. Like invest in people, just like buy stock in people. She's one of the kind of people that I would invest in. Number one.
So I had I'm gonna sidetrack you here. I had a professor in school where he had a crazy idea. He was like, "What if we could give scholarships to students in their second year, with the understanding that he's like, it's not really a scholarship." But we'll give them a full ride, and all they owe us is like 1% of their income for the next 20 years. And he's like, because we get to watch them for the first year. We'd get to know them on an intimate level. We'd find out who the all-stars are, because we can tell. And then we'll pay for you to go to school that second year, because we like you. And then all we want is 1% of your income for like the next 20 years. He goes, and we're taking the bets on the people who we think would be high income earners to pay us back and then some. And he goes, that's my crazy idea. What do you think?
I love that idea. I don't understand why we don't. I think that's coming. Honestly,
I think you'd hurt some feelings, but yeah. You know, he's like, whatever. Yeah, but get over it.
I've heard a lot of people talk about the idea of investing in individual like sports players. And there's not like, what would you be giving them money to do since they're just talented athletes? But it's like, you know, you basically would be giving them like money up front for a cut of what they do. You're basically betting on their performance over, you know, over a period of time. But I like the idea of saying, you know, I'm not necessarily investing in a product or a company. I'm investing in a person. I've heard people talk about it, doing it with politicians. You know, and just like if it were possible to buy stock in somebody, I would totally do it with this person. I don't know why this girl just she's really smart, and she came up with this cool idea, which is basically she looked into how do you make makeup. She wanted to make makeup. And she realized that basically, like, all makeup is essentially the same. What really creates these differentiation in price where you get the really expensive makeup is color palette. And it's not that the colors are more expensive to make the different colors. It's just that the different shades sell less. So in order to justify making it, you have to charge more, right? So that's where like Sephora charges more, is because they just have a larger color palette. And you know, it's a classic, economics of scales, right? So the reason why the makeup at, you know, lipstick, blush, whatever, at Walmart is cheaper than the stuff at Sephora isn't because it's less quality makeup. Actually, generally, the base products are exactly the same. The thing is that, you know, Walmart's going to sell a billion gallons of it, and they can do it at, you know, so they can do it at small margins and make a lot of money, whereas Sephora can't do that. They're going to sell smaller quantities, so they charge more, you know, simple economics. Well, she took that and said, okay, it's really easy to make, and it's all made from the same stuff, and if you buy the material in bulk, you can get it for really, really affordable prices. So how can I make makeup on my own? And it
interesting
came up, it gave birth to what's basically a 3D printer for makeup, and it's not a full product. She sells it on it being really easy to use. They, like, you basically go in with like a color picker, go into Photoshop and then, or whatever, you just make a single, like, a page a certain type of, you know, that color, and then you hit print. And it sends it to this device, and it prints off the ink. And I think what you'd have to do is, I think you'd have to make software, just for although it would just be a layer to sort of, you know, bridge that gap, but make it cool, make it like, oh, I'm picking my ink colors. And then you could set up like a website exchange where people can design different colors and stuff. She's selling the printer for, like, she wants to sell the printer for $200 to $300, and then sell the price of the inks for cheap. And it's funny, you could hear the people in the guys that were like, because it's a panel of guys that are all asking the questions about makeup, and so they're trying to, like, bring out their business stuff and and be supportive of women in technology, which is, like, cool, because you're supposed to do that. I'm sitting here thinking, like, this is stupid brilliant. This is, like, oh, my gosh, this is actually truly disruptive. Like, if you ever, like, have actually gone and spent time with your girlfriend at the makeup store, you realize this is crazy disruptive. This is, like, this can take an entire market and just, like, completely shift it upside down if you package it right. It's all about the packaging. And, like, this is really cool. This is super exciting. I want in on this. And they're, like... And you could tell that some of them got it, because they're like, so when, like, you know, what are you trying to disrupt here? Are you trying to disrupt how we do makeup or the pricing model? And she goes, I'd like to do both. And they're like, you've already stated that the profit margins are crazy good on this. Can't you just disrupt, like, how makeup is made and distributed and keep the margins? Which I was like, yeah, I would start there to let the margins come down on their own. You're talking about a commoditization, a natural commoditization of this whole thing, right? And which is, like, I don't know. I just sit there and I go, like, oh, this is clever. This is a really good idea. And it was actually cool. She had the hardware there working. She did the whole demonstration with the software, took it out, and was able to, like, to put the makeup on, like, and with the printed makeup. And you just sit there and go, man, this is, like, that is such a good idea. And, you know, it's funny. It's like Verb, you know, when you talk about, you know, the whole thing is called disrupt, right? And so it's all about disruption. In Verb, I understand why it's thought of as disruptive. But the reality of it is, like, what are you going – are you trying to disrupt Google? Are you trying to disrupt search? I don't know. It just kind of feels like a cool product, but it doesn't feel like it's going to completely remake the landscape of these different companies. And maybe I'm just not imaginative enough. Or as I sit here and go, like, this is the kind of product that Mink may not do it, but what Mink represents definitely will. And it's like, it's that whole idea of giving, and what it is, is she's basically taking the principle of of, you know, real-time manufacturing, and where you take, you just sell the components, whether that's plastic, because calling it 3D printing is kind of a misnomer, except that what it is it's rapid manufacturing, rapid prototyping that's done at an affordable price point. You give that stuff to people, and then you give them the ability to get creative. Holy cow! And, you know, that is potentially truly disruptive. And makeup is an enormous market. Cosmetics is crazy big. And you could completely change the distribution model for cosmetics throughout the world. How is that not unbelievably disruptive? It's funny, and I'm, you know, I appreciate the fact that they got excited about "Let the girl in tech, yay!" But I think they got excited about it being a girl in tech, yay, because it's a girl in tech, as opposed to like, this is a crazy cool product, and you know, and it's also really cool because, you know, there is a, I don't know, for me it's like I want people to I don't like it when females are their ideas don't get as much credence because they're females. I really hate that. But I hate it also just as much when we say, wow, this is a really great idea, because guess what? A girl was able to come up with it. Like, that's horrible too. The whole, like, that's not the right way to look at this. The right way to look at this is it's a great idea, and it's going to bring really cool, important technology to a lot of people who don't necessarily appreciate it, aka 13-year-old girls who care about makeup. And you're going to start teaching them about rapid prototyping and, you know, developing, you know, different websites and different product models and bringing technology and literally getting the technology out of the way so that they can be creative through these technology, you know, technological processes, which the greatest products in the world are all about taking technology and having them get out of the way. And I heard in I was reading about Google's moonshots and the whole Google X thing, and they basically say, like, we're only trying to do one thing. We're trying to get technology out of the way. Use technology to get out of the way. That's what Google Glass is all about. That's what Google, you know, Google Drive is all about. It's about, you know, it's about giving technology to people in such a way where it just becomes seamless, and they become obviously dependent on it at some point. But it just works. It works around them. And you sit there and go, I don't know, this is really cool. This is really cool in all the right ways. And I was irritated watching the a couple of the guys on the stage, because they, like, you know, because they didn't seem to get it. They seemed to be excited about it because it was a girl. And you're like, okay, get off, leave me alone. Whereas, I don't know, I just, like I said, if I could invest in somebody, this is the kind of person I would invest in. I'd also invest in the Blue Rhino guy, because simple ideas that take off are, you know, those are hard to come up with. Holy cow, those are hard to come up with. And that's a simple idea that took off.
And I'm like, dude, I pay for water. If I can get people to not run their water for even just a couple minutes, that starts to add up pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. You know, whereas the Verb guys, like, it's a cool name, it's a cool technology, but, you know, it's not. And, you know, Google, the reason why Google doesn't do that isn't because they don't think it's a good idea, or it's not because they think that it's not a viable market. The reason Google doesn't do it is because they want a computer that's so smart that it does it for them. And they don't have one yet, so they're going to focus on things that the computers are smart enough to do. They want to build an AI that will just kind of figure that out all for you and take everything that you do with their services and turn that into those kind of vertical ideas. Whereas Verb is saying, like, basically, we're going to do this for movies. And, you know, date nights and stuff. And so there will be a couple of tasks that it's very good at. Whereas Google wants it to be expandable to any task. That's when they'll bring out a product like that. That's what Google Now is about. That's what they're, like, all their Google search, you know, voice activated stuff. That's what it's all about. It's about it being scalable. Whereas Verb is more like Siri, where Siri is good at specific tasks. Now, it's got great language comprehension for those tasks, but there's only a few things that it can do. Unless you tell it, set an alarm for exactly 11, and then it responds back, What time would you like me to set your alarm for exactly 11? 11 o'clock. Set it for 11 o'clock, Siri.
If you could do that exactly, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think Verb is disruptive. I think these other two are. And
yeah, I agree with you.
I don't think you'll hear about what?
I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't think you'll ever hear Verb again unless you sign up for their service, which I did.
There you go. Where I will actually probably buy that water heater at some point in time. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'd install it in my own house. Just not that I'd have to figure out how to get under my house somehow in order to do it. But
crawl.
Yeah, if only there was a way to get to that.
Right.
That's
I understand.
Entire, yeah. I have to break through my foundation or dig it under.
I think... You what?
Oh, there is no way to get to my crawl space underneath the house. So either I'm going through a floor or I'm digging under or something. Some combination.
That seems like a poor design.
Yeah, I would agree.
Huh.
Won't argue. Won't hear any arguments from me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So,
let's
move on here to, okay. I don't care.
So, Target CEO stepped down after the whole breach thing of all their data, which I think is interesting, just sort of the characters of tech, right? I mean, that stinks. That's a big thing. But one of the and there were rumors that they found the guy that had done it, but and then those rumors got turned over. No, we didn't find him. But they also a bunch of the tech credit card companies announced this week that they're finally starting the big giant push for getting everybody over to the chipped credit cards. And everybody was. And they were putting off as long as they could because it was going to cost a bazillion dollars, billions and millions of dollars, and they weren't looking forward to that. But they think that the Target breach was kind of what pushed it over the edge. We're like, okay, it's time. We got to do this. It's the vulnerabilities are now becoming unavoidable, and we got to do something to shore up our security. So far, nobody knows of any money that's been stolen through Target, but. You know, still going to costing people their jobs, costing the economy, you know, in these big companies, bunch of dollar bills. So that'll be interesting to see. You're going to get your chipped card soon. It's going to be like going to foreign lands. Yeah.
Well, and from what I understood, remember how I was talking about I had one and then I got like another one and I was like, oh, that's weird. The reason for that was because of all the data breaches going on. They sent me another card just because. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I've got the chip. I'm ready, man. That expense has already been made.
You're ready.
Wells Fargo's is on top of things.
Well, let's see. Apple's moving too slow. I thought Apple was gonna try to pull a fast one and have that whole rollout happen at the same time with their iBeacon thing, but. Yeah. iBeacon, you know, credit card, but we'll see if they're able to pull that off. Probably not at this point, but bummer. So expect that coming over the next couple of years. I'm sure we'll have something to talk about in that. Yeah. Also, the Facebook effect. So early on, Oculus Rift, everybody chastised at Facebook for these, you know, purchasing them and selling out and blah, blah, blah. And basically everything we talked about why this was a good idea, because this is why you listen to the show, is everything we talked about why we thought it was a good idea early on, turns out that's exactly what's going on. It was a great idea because now all the venture capitalists are investing in the Oculus developers' projects. They're getting into the game.
Oh, that's good. Because that means that there'll be software to back up the hardware.
Yep.
It'll be a success.
And And there wasn't any confidence up until this point that there would be enough hardware to justify massive software development stuff. So the VCs weren't, you know, giving any money to the development community. And now, because Facebook's behind it, and there will be a final product, and everybody believes it, now there's going to be software. And, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, neither, really. They kind of come at the same time. And in order for things to work, and here you go. They're gonna co-develop, which is very cool, very exciting. They also it leaked out of Sony, or Sony said something. But did you hear anything about that? The Sony controllers. They have this like bright LED light on it that drives everybody absolutely crazy because it's super bright when you like turn off your lights and everything. Were you aware of that?
No.
Yeah, the new PlayStation 4 controllers, it was driving people nuts, and everybody's like, why would you do this? It's like a terrible design thing. Well, they finally like let it slip this week. They're like, it has something to do with Project Morpheus, which is their VR stuff. Everybody's like, what? Look, we can't tell you what, and we would have told you months ago, but we didn't want to, like, you know, blow the surprise with Project Morpheus. But yeah, those are connected. Like, what do you mean? So basically, what everybody's decided it based on that admission and kind of the rumors that have been going around is that the PlayStation controllers, they're going to be involved in motion tracking some way. So the Morpheus head tracker, the controller head tracker, the magic wands, you're going to get all movement-y'd out. And everything's going to be tracked with motion, which is cool. Ooh. It's exciting. So I didn't have anything to do with anything other than Oculus Rift. I'm just excited about VR is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I can tell. That's okay.
But
what is Kickstat?
Yeah. Okay. Kicksat. So this is actually one of the coolest Kickstarter projects that I've seen, just because it's kind of random. Basically, what this dude said is he said, "I want to launch a satellite." They said it was actually a group working for MIT or something. It's a student group from. His name is Manchester, Zach Manchester. He doesn't go to Manchester University. Where does he go? Doesn't matter. Some university. They wanted to build a satellite, launch it out into space, and then do stuff with it. And so they came up with this Kickstarter project idea, which was basically they build this satellite, and it would have all these tiny little satellite discs on it, and they're small. They're only a couple inches on the side, but they'd have an antenna and a solar panel on it and stuff. And so they have this big carrier unit that they'd launch out into space, and then that would sit out there in space for a little while, and then it would just start to spin at some point, and they'd release all the latches that kept the smaller satellites in place, and then as it spun, all these little satellites would disperse. And if okay. you paid enough on Kickstarter, you'd buy one, basically. It'd be yours. And and it would start to transmit all sorts of data and stuff. And it was just a big experiment. And they basically would get to like launch a satellite into space. And it was going to be really cool and really exciting. So this last week, they got it successfully funded. They built it. They got the rocket they were going to launch it up on. They launched it into space. And then they had to deal with solar radiation. Turns out the whole thing is run by like this one microprocessor in the main body of it, and this thing is your microcontroller. It controlled everything, make sure that all the spin rates for everything were going right, and it turns out it got hit by some sort of. They think it got hit by some sort of cosmic radiation, and it messed with the real-time clock that's built into it that keeps track of time and reset it. And the reason why that's a big deal is because the clock was counting down to when it was supposed to start its spin and launch all the satellites out of it. And it the clock being reset sets it back like 2 weeks, which you wouldn't think was a big deal, except turns out that the decay rate of its fall back to Earth puts it means that it won't actually start the launch of the satellites until it started its re-entry into Earth's atmosphere, which if you've ever seen re-entry into Earth's atmosphere, it's not pleasant for any mechanical devices involved, and they get vaporized. So they do not think that the thing will actually launch the its sub-satellite systems before it re-enters and destroys everything. So, bummer December. There is a chance that they might be able to establish a communication link and they'll be able to actually force it to launch, but they're pretty doubtful that they'll be able to, and they're going to keep working on it until the disappointing end of this project. But
that's so bummer. Oh man, I would cry.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's just I feel so bad. I feel so bad for everybody involved because it's just like that's right. Space is not easy. Like NASA,
turns out it's look rocket easy. Science.
Yeah, right. I know. Jeez, and you know, and you, so it's like you wouldn't even think about it. They're like, yeah, we were able to do run diagnostics, and it wasn't a power surge or anything. It was just the only thing that makes sense. It's kind of process of elimination. They're like, the only thing that could have caused this cosmic radiation, just a blast of some decaying particle knocking the you know, the timer and messing with it, and just like, bummer. Bummer. Well, what are you supposed to do? I just feel so bad for everybody involved. I mean, at the same time, they got to launch a satellite into space. I mean, they didn't get to launch 1,000 satellites into space, which is a bummer. But, you know, they got to launch at least one, which is pretty cool. That's one more than I've gotten to launch into space. So, I don't know.
See, that's the kind of thing where it would be really cool if you know, I don't know, someone like Elon Musk is watching and feels for the group and is like, we'll get it up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just donates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just throughout the process of, yeah, in our next International Space Station run, we'll add it to the cargo and we'll push it out the door and, you know, make it happen. You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing where you'd like to see him step up, you know, if it fails. Like, hey, I know this was a dream. I saw it failed on Kickstarter. I think it's kind of a cool idea. If we care about space, let's go for it.
Right. Let's see here.
Talking about something else coming crashing down and burning up. Let's talk about the Wii U.
Yeah. Oh man, this is just disappointing. This is bums me out all the time. Basically,
yeah, we know it's coming. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't a surprise when they announced it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's crushing their bottom line. It is tanking the company right now. The 3DSs are pretty much all that's left. But nobody's buying a Wii U, and it's not pretty. It is not pretty. It's GameCube all over again. Which is just rough because they're like both are suffering from the same thing. They're good systems, good games. Nobody cares. What are you supposed to do? The answer is build better systems that are more exciting and change stuff. But it's Nintendo reported a staggering loss of $456 million, which is a lot of money for the last year, and it's being laid squarely at the Wii U. Nintendo sold 2.72 million Wii U's in the last 12 months. Running totals for the Xbox One and PS4, which haven't been out for a full year, is 5 and 7 million respectively. The last quarter, they only sold 310,000 units, which is dismal. They sold 12 million 3DSs, and which means they've sold just shy of 43 million globally, which is, you know, pretty awesome. That's just terrible. That's just terrible. It's terrible. And Nintendo's already kind of talked about like what they plan on doing next. There's rumors. They're kind of stoking rumors of building a phone, like a Nintendo cell phone.
Oh yeah,
which,
I think I've heard about that.
yeah, it seems like a horrible idea because why would you buy that? I mean, like, unless it was great hardware with a whole suite of apps, like, are you going to put a Facebook app on it? Because, I love Nintendo products, and if it doesn't have a Facebook app, I'm not going to use it, Nintendo. Now, it would be interesting if they basically took Android and put a Nintendo Virtual Engine on top of it, and put a Nintendo layer into the whole thing, and how they would secure that in such a way that it wouldn't just become wildfire where everybody would steal it. Except everybody already has Nintendo Virtual Engines on their virtual machines on their Android phone, so I don't know if. I would, if it were me in the company, I wouldn't worry about it that much. That's the only way route that you could go, though, if you were Nintendo, was to basically leverage the Android, do what Kindle did, do what Amazon did with the Kindle, which is build your own interface, build your own everything, but it runs Android apps. That way you'd get Facebook and everything, which would be kind of cool. They've also kind of talked about building a system for developing markets, which would be a end system that was cheaper. Which who knows how that would fare, but they're struggling. They are not doing well. Which freaks me out because I don't want them to stop making video games, but
Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, it's not just a, I mean, unless they want to just switch over to software and go the EA route, but that would require them to make them for different systems, and I just don't see them doing that.
yeah,
Sell to
I like
Apple.
the
Just get it
idea.
over with. Come on.
I know, I know,
Not gonna
I know.
happen. Not gonna happen.
Go
But I could wish.
pull a Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Which it's funny, the last I heard, they actually I mentioned earlier that he was going to be the first hip hop billionaire, and then everybody was like, actually, if you look at if it is a $3.2 billion deal based on his current assets and how much of Beats that he owns. It would actually like bring him up shy of $1 billion by a couple hundred, like a couple $10 million, and which I know is like you're splitting hairs at that point, but let's be real, like a 950 hundred millionaire is not a billionaire. I mean, you're almost there,
It's
I get
not.
it, but like let's wait till you get there before we celebrate crossing the finish line. How did I get there? Oh yeah, Nintendo, they should do that. Sell the fate. Sell the Apple. As an iPhone owner, I'd be totally down with that. But oh. Then
Now I'm really interested in this holograms thing in India. What is that?
okay. So this one's kind of a weird. So, do you remember back when Snoop Dogg performed with Tupac on stage at Coachella like 2 or 3 years ago?
No, I no.
Okay, well, Tupac's been dead for a long time, and so in order for him
Oh, that
to
was a virtual thing, right? Or
right, because yeah,
yeah.
so
Okay, I know
Tupac
what
was
you're talking
dead,
about.
so. Yeah, so then, and it's that whole hologram thing that they've been doing forever at the Haunted Mansion at in Disneyland, where you take a reflective glass surface and you project onto the glass surface so you can see through it and you see the projections, and that's how they make the ephemeral ghosts that fly around. They basically did the same thing at Coachella, but it was a CGI version of Tupac singing. Rapping one of his songs and doing it with Snoop Dogg, and everybody's like, "Oh my gosh!" And part of the whole mythos of Tupac is that he's been releasing albums long after he was dead. So they're like, "What? How dead is he?" And he's pretty dead. They're old tracks that they didn't publish before that. And so, anyways, this basic technology, same thing. In India, the world's largest democracy. How do you go around and talk to people and you're trying to convince 800 million people to vote for you to be the prime minister of your country, and gets hard. And so what they've done, what this dude has done, is he's gone around and they set up these holographic projectors on stages all over the country. And then he'll do these video conferences where he's basically just in front of a camera and then they're projecting this image onto glass screens on a stage. Yeah. But he's like, he's there and he's doing meet and greets and he's talking to everybody, but it gives him a more, you know, more of a presence because he's on stage as opposed to you just watching him on a TV screen. And it's like, you know, it's all stage crafted, but it's designed to allow him to actually, you know, feel like he's more there. And it seems to be working. It's helped his polls. It's just one of those weird twists of technology. Cause you're like, it's just a TV show. Like it's just a TV conference. Like he's not here. He's not even doing like a web conference with a giant group. It's like a pre-recorded thing.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like with Tupac. It was like, you know, having Tupac's CGI be on a screen in the background would be like, okay, that's, you know, that's kind of cool, I guess. But having CGI Tupac be on stage, like same size and like moving around with Snoop Dogg, everybody went wild. They just thought it was the coolest thing in the world, and it got a huge amount of press. Man, I don't, it's funny. I mean, it's one of those things where I think it's interesting because the technology is so old. they're not doing anything new or clever for whatever reason, it has a completely different effect on people than, you know, projecting these images onto screens. It makes me wonder, I want to think about it long and hard. Why does this do this? Because to me, I get the gimmick, but at the same time, I think it's kind of cool and exciting. I don't know why. I don't know why. I wonder if you'll see more of that in the near future in countries other than India.
Like in the United States, like in this next election around?
Yeah, specifically. I don't think the next election, but I could see it in 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see in 2020 somebody doing that.
I love the last line on this little article that says here. They said Modi, who is this politician who's doing it, they said he's promising working toilets to every household. Like, which is to say, the country with the world's first hologram politician is also a country that lacks indoor plumbing on a wide scale. We live in a weird world.
Yeah,
very true.
It is weird. That is really weird. But holographic projections on a stage are way cheaper to do a couple of than,
yeah, that's true,
indoor plumbing. You know, indoor plumbing is an infrastructure of tremendous scale.
So I have non-news.
All right, tell me about it.
Facebook Poke is dead.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, dang it! Who killed it?
Facebook did. They took it down from the store, and they also took out a Facebook camera. Just done.
Nobody used it. Their experiment failed. I'll bet Snapchat was, those jerks were celebrating in their homes.
Yeah, probably.
I got that news.
Yeah, I thought Poke was a better app, but.
It suffered from Facebook branding syndrome, the Facebook effect. People didn't want to use it because it wasn't cool. It wasn't hip. You know, it wasn't the cool bar to go and attend. But I thought I agree. I thought it was much better performance, much better overall everything, and better features. But like you said, people didn't want to use it. You know, one of the things that Snapchat does, it just drives me nuts, is how many people don't know how to take a video with their Snapchat. And I've decided it's because Snapchat comes up with like all these like clever UI things that nobody else uses. Literally, no other app. uses that design language accept them? And I think they want to push it and make it popular and be responsible for the idea of you take a picture by tapping it, you take a video by holding it. And it's one of those things that literally nobody figures it out, which just I think is so stupid. And Snapchat drives me nuts. And they got their big, like, they got the FCC basically came out and was like, dude, y'all lied. Like, really, you lied. Like, honestly, we all knew that. Like, if you listen to the show, it's been obvious for a while. Your pictures don't get deleted. And they do data mining on all of the stuff that passes through their servers. Like, the pictures are there. There's nothing, they have that little ghost and ephemeral, you know, stuff. And the second time I've used that word today. And obviously I'm trying to make sure I use it right in context. I used it wrong the other day. And I said it, and I said, that's wrong. And I looked it up, and I'm like, yeah, it was wrong. And now I want to, like, make sure I use it right. that whole temporary thing, it's just not true. And so the FCC came back and was like, y'all lied. You shouldn't do that anymore. And then Snapchat was like, yeah, you're right, we lied. They don't get deleted. It bums me out because I don't like them, and like you said, Poke is a better app. But then again, how often did you use Poke versus Snapchat?
Well, I used Poke a whole bunch when it first got started, and was poking people left and right, and then no one was responding. So, you know, I would go to where the responses were.
Right. Exactly. That's that's the problem. You know, there's no reason to keep the app around if nobody's using it and nobody.
See, I felt like if Facebook could have figured out, you know, had maybe not keep it as a standalone app, but have it so that it was somehow integrated in with the big Facebook, you know, where, hey, James sent you a Poke message and you read it and then it warns you it's going to go away, you know, and then it just does. Right, and then like, hey, if you want to send James one of these messages, download the app. You know, had they integrated it a little bit better to get people to try it out and check it out, I think that actually would have helped some, but they didn't. So, you know, whatever. The other one is Camera, which they're like, its big innovation was you could upload more than one photo at once, which now you can do in the main app. So we're good.
Right, and they came out with, like, the product was being launched, like, what was it, a week after they bought Instagram, and everybody was like, what's the deal? Yeah. And Mark was like, let's see which one wins. You know, so they didn't put any marketing strength behind it because, you know, Instagram was doing what it was supposed to do and, you know, didn't worry about it, so... Yeah, I think we realized that both of those products were direct competitors with those other two products, and they dealt with them how they dealt with them, which was they didn't deal with Snapchat, and they're just letting them peter out on their own, and they dealt with Snapchat Instagram by buying them.
It's okay.
Interesting. Last but not least, part of bigger news, cab companies are they're freaking out talking about disruptiveness. Uber and Lyft and your various cab companies are your various cool new sharing economy transportation apps. They don't like to be called, they're not cabs, right? They're messing with the cab companies in a big way. And there's been some kind of cool news along with it. Number one, Uber got integrated into Google Maps, so you can do Uber directly through Google Maps now, which is a big news for Uber. There was a big story that the black cabs in London are like, they're threatening like to go on strike and just cause mass chaos if Uber is allowed to get in on their territory, which is how freaked out they are by Uber, which is exciting because that is the true sign of a true disruptiveness. But the big one that, you know, I thought was, I just think this is so dumb, but it's scientists are trying to help taxis beat Uber at its own game. Basically, what happened was one of Uber's big, you know, one of these companies. It's like, you know, they were pitched as the sharing economy, right? Anybody with a car can now do this whole thing and do the taxi thing, and you can make some money on the side, and it's cool. I've met people like that, and it's really cool. They're just like, they're going to school, they got a car, it's a Saturday afternoon, they're gonna pick some fares up, you know, make a couple extra bucks for the bar tonight. Like, it's cool. It's really a cool idea, especially if you're living in cities where this makes sense, like San Francisco or Seattle or stuff. But it's wrecking the cab companies. And one of the big things that Uber's able to do, because they've got all these data and they're bringing them all together, is you get picked up so quick. It is so easy to call a cab. You get picked up really quickly, and they're able to balance the loads really, really well, so that they're like cab. There's not during the slow period, there's not long waits of like cabs aren't getting used. And then during the fast periods, like when it's really busy, there aren't long waits for the people, you know, for the cab, people getting a cab, and there aren't like, you know, and the cabs aren't overloaded because they're not being well coordinated. Basically, what's coming in is engineers are building apps to, or building, you know, the structures for the cab companies to start doing this massive organization of cabs. So they can do all the load balancing that they're supposed to do and get everybody to where they're supposed to get. And they're basically leveraging the cool technology that Uber has been developing,
Yeah,
and
it
these,
sounds
you know,
like it.
Uber and Lyft and everybody. Yeah, and they're basically saying, well, that was a clever idea because it's a better product, and that's why they're killing us. It's not just because it's cheaper. And you know, it happens to be cheaper and a better product. Yeah, that's how you really disrupt. And that's what they're doing, is they're like, you know, they're saying, well, we're going to take away one of their weapons, which is, it's a better product. They're, you know, I get picked up faster. And you know, which is great. I mean, that's the nature of competition, right? You know,
Yeah, I much
with
prefer this
the
over, you know, them trying to sue them or, you know, make them illegal.
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is fantastic news. This is fantastic news for everybody, because I still think there's a value proposition for licensed taxi cabs as opposed to, you know, Lyft and everything, you know, all these other companies, because there is kind of a social security. They're registered, they're licensed, they're, you know,
Yeah.
they're you're gonna pay more because you get you're supposed to get a better service. And if you get a better service and it costs more, then they'll still survive. The problem is that it's not necessarily a better service, right? These sharing economy transportation apps are safe, they're secure, they're faster, they're cheaper, and you know, the taxis have to reconcile that. If you're going to cost more, you have to be worth more. And this is one of the big ways that they need to catch up, and they're catching up, which is cool. This makes me super excited. What they're doing in London, they're idiots. They're absolute, you know, they're gonna, it's, you're gonna lose this one. You're gonna lose this one eventually. And I guess it makes sense to fight it as long as you can. You know, why kill the golden goose a minute sooner than you have to? But at the same time, like, you know, brace yourselves. You know, don't think the golden goose is going to survive forever, because, you know, eventually everybody's going to start to figure this stuff out, and you're not going to win. But it's interesting. Uber's big argument is that they're not a metered taxi service. Because technically, what they do is you tell them that where you want to go, from where to where, and then they calculate your fare based on that information. And so you're not actually metered when you get in the car. All the costs are predetermined. And whereas
Interesting.
taxis, it's all metered. And because of that, it's a, you know, it's a different,
Interesting technicality.
yeah, I know, right? But it's legally, they can't stop companies like Uber from operating as a taxi service, because you're technically not, as a metered taxi service, because technically they're
Yeah.
not a metered taxi service.
It's like a limo.
But
Interesting.
Exactly. I thought so. But
very cool. Wow, so there was some there were some happenings this week in tech. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, no.
Overall.
It's cool.
Yeah, I like it. Cool, man. Cool. Well, I don't have a good way of ending it. I guess.
Happy Mom's Day.
Happy Mom's Day, everybody. That's right. So on that note, everybody, that's our show. Tech happened, and there's still a lot going on. We're coming into the summer months where things will start heating up, and we'll continue to have more to talk about.
That was a dork.
I know. I know. I love it. It just comes to me. You know, I don't even try. All right, everybody. thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my brother from the exact same mother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.